this time, I believe the Honorable Mr. Kiwanis will conduct this hearing. So, Honorable Mr. Kiwanis, this is your hearing, sir.
Thank you, sir. Does that second?
This is Freeman.
Sir, can you hear me clearly?
Yes, sir, I can.
Thank you. Can you state your full name? Pardon me. Can you state your full name and ADC number for the record?
Your hearing will begin right now. Can you repeat that again, please?
One second, sir. Can you state your full name and ADC number for the record?
Full name, Navar Ray Greenwood. ADC number 109821.
Thank you, sir. You are appearing before the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency for a 31-412A hearing to consider regular parole, absolute discharge, or home arrest. I would like to introduce you to the members of the board conducting the hearing with you today. If you can see on the video conference screen, I'll begin with the individuals sitting on the opposite side of the bench and work toward me. We have the Honorable Mr. Michael Johnson, the Honorable Ms. Gail Rittenhouse. At the center of the bench, we have our esteemed board chairman, Dr. C.T. Wright. Next to me is the Honorable Mr. David Neal, and my name is Louis Quinones, and I'll be serving as the panel lead for your hearing. I would like to begin this hearing with the following summary. Mr. Nevada Ray Freeman, ADC number 109821, is 56 years old. On November 4, 1994, Mr. Freeman was sentenced to life imprisonment for murder in the first degree. He was approximately 32 years old at the time of the innocent offense. This crime occurred on or about June 16, 1994. He was found guilty by jury trial on October 7, 1994. He has a limited criminal history with one prior arrest for assault. It should be noted that he owes $7,753.89 in restitution, according to his pre-sentence report. I will read a short summary of the offense in question. On June 16, 1994, at approximately 7:30 p.m., Mr. Freeman arrived at a residence where his estranged girlfriend was staying. Mr. Freeman asked her to accompany him downstairs to have a discussion. A few minutes later, witnesses heard a gunshot. Mr. Freeman was observed standing over the victim. He then fired a second shot toward the victim's head. Mr. Freeman went up to the apartment complex, took his children, and fled the area. Police arrived approximately 10 minutes later. The victim was pronounced dead at the scene. Cause of death was two gunshot wounds to the head. Later that evening, Mr. Freeman was apprehended without incident at his parents' residence. He was held at a $1 million bond until the jury verdict was returned and he was held without bond. And again, that is just a short version of the offense based on the pre-sentence report. According to Ames, Mr. Freeman has received limited programming in the Arizona Department of Corrections. He has a release plan, which includes living with his daughter, pursuing state health benefits, and working for a landscaping company. He has a low history of discipline in the Department of Corrections from 1995 through 2005, with his last ticket a minor on January 21st, 2005 for disobeying orders. Based on the fact that the incident offense occurred in 1994, this is his first hearing before the board under the TIS code. In this particular report, we were not provided an exact parole eligibility date. And I just state that, sir, because when we receive the eligibility forms, there's often a parole eligibility date associated with it, and this one did not have one, although it would make sense that it's been 25 years since your offense and that you would be up for a hearing. We have numerous letters of support, this parole packet, as well as individuals supporting Mr. Freeman inside the hearing room today. And I want to make sure of that, will all of you be speaking on behalf of Mr. Freeman today? Thank you. So, Mr. Freeman, this is your first time before this board and a chance for us to get to know you. Can you tell us in your own words about the crime that resulted in your incarceration and why you should be considered for supervised release? Thank you, Mr. Freeman. Yes, sir.
In June of 1984, I left my job to go pick up my, go to go check on my kids, my 3 yards. The reason I was over there because what made it is because I wanted to always having custody issues. And my little daughter, Sherry, she was the person that she was the, my little daughter, that you know, that, you know, they were being left unsupervised. And, you know, that there's the one would need them with somebody else. So, on or about June 16th, and then I met one people over at the apartment to check my daughter. And when I got there, funny that she wasn't there, the three of us, and her friend didn't want me to take my daughter because she hadn't got permission for a week. So I waited for her to get back, and I'm not exactly how long ago that it took, but it wasn't a while. When she showed up, I asked her, we can go downstairs to talk, because I didn't really want to argue in front of the children. They were up in the apartment, so we walked downstairs and went to the car, and basically we started arguing, and I which is my fault. I produced a handgun just to scare her, which I never should have done, but you know, I think that's what happened. And I just remember her, you know, she said what she did to her. She just said, well, you do that thing, you won't see your kids anyway. And that's when I seen a lot of doing it. I go back to the shop, and I just told her, get up, and I figured, she would get up if she didn't. And just understanding to my brain, like the children, and their kids and all that. So I got out of the car and went upstairs and kicked the door down and took my daughters in, took them downstairs. My mother was in my car, so I took her car, put the children in the car, and drove to my parents' house. And that's where I threw myself in. I want to make sure at least that the children, if they will be taken care of, my parents, they're good parents. Drop the kids off. I want to step in, but I want to report to despite my best effort for having well intentions to go over and get my kids up. Why did the show have died that day? And especially looking back over it now, she may have never died, nor should she have died, and that is totally my fault. And I want to apologize to her family if they are there that they can. I just want to tell her family I'm so sorry about this. It's something that shouldn't have happened, and it just like I go on my, I'm part of my remorse section that. Nobody has the right to speak out. And, without even knowing it, that's pretty much what I did. And, nobody has that right to speak out. And because of my reckless actions, pointing the loss of life, it's really sad because, the children have lost their mom, and to grow up without a mom is horrible, because I feel every child should have a mom. My mom was, growing up with her and my dad, it was very comforting. What happened with you? Thank you. I told that baby that, they showed me how to grow up with their mom. But when I think back over all these years, despite me having good intentions, I never should have been using a gun. And it was just reckless and just dumb on my part. And I am so sorry about that. I know it didn't feel bad about it because the children lost their mom and their father for 25 years. This thing, it really boils down to the children, and they suffer so much. One of his family suffers so much. I owe them so much. I'm honest with them, and I really want to know how to make it up to them. If there is such a thing as making something like that up, it's a nightmare. And for them, I know it's not easy. I know some time has passed, but I know it was going through that loss. And I love my daughter so much, but I still owe them such an apology too for taking them on. And I have, in the past, apologized to them, but I still owe them so much. I really do. And if we're in the family, if You know, how do they feel? I can't always make me angry at them because you know, I witnessed to them, and if they don't forgive me, I still, there's nothing I can do about feeling angry or mad at them, because you know, now that so many years have passed and I look back over that, you know, I don't know any student I was in their shoes, but I do want to vote because I do know their family. Well, I did know their family quite well. Their grandmother, my mother's grandmother, Sister Baptist, she passed it up years ago, and I was so close with her.
Sir, I'm going to ask you to kind of stick to the business of the hearing today. We do need to manage time. I want to hear what you have to say, but we want to have time to ask you questions about the case. So is there anything else that you want to tell us?
About the crime? I went there that day to, you know, to essentially, I thought, rescue my kids, and it was just, despite my best efforts, I shouldn't have and I'm just truly remorseful and sorry for that. And all I can say is, I let the family care.
Mr. Freeman, I don't mean to be rude, but we're watching you on video conference, and we need you to look up at the screen. You're beginning to get muffled, and we can't see you. We're like looking at the top of your head.
Oh, okay.
Thank you, sir.
Yes, sir. You're welcome. That's about it as far as the crime. I truly was off this having happened, and I don't want to make this sound, you know, like I'm not sorry for everything or. But the only thing, one thing I do want to say is that I have a major regret of pulling my gun out. I thought my children were, ready. They were for, being at that hotel, which was, like a crack house. But I don't regret going there to get them or save them, but I do regret my actions afterwards. That's one thing that I will always regret. I think about that every day, and I will regret that until the day I die. But all these years later, I am happy that, my children, they turned out to be okay, that, they're alive and all that. So. I just want to apologize to the family and to my daughters, and I just want to thank the Lord for giving me an opportunity to express that.
If it's okay, I'd like to be able to ask you some questions now to kind of move along the process. Thank you, sir. One is, and I'm just going to concentrate on the crime for a moment, although we're not here to retry the case, we're here to consider whether or not, to vote, this board will vote as to whether or not we think you can be safely returned to the community and be supervised by the Department of Corrections, either through regular parole or absolute discharge. But am I correct that leading up to this incident that you were very, very angry?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And the concern that I have is, and I'm not trying to put words in your mouth or telling you what to say, is you're saying things like the gun went off, and it's not really the way it reads, meaning it looks much more like a case with an individual who was very, very angry in a domestic violence situation, brought a gun to the argument, and lost control. It's my experience with firearms, and I have a lot of experience with them, that they don't just go off. You know, there's the business of the finger being on the trigger, and there's intention. And so I'm not trying to humiliate you, but I think that bringing a gun just to scare someone is a stretch. So, are you saying it was just an accident?
Sir, but you are right about me having my hand on the trigger, and I did, and you know, and I was really angry, but it, you know, going back over, I remember, it didn't even feel like I even pulled the trigger. I mean, but obviously I did. There's no doubt about it, I did. Being just angry and scared and shaken. I did pull the trigger. I mean, because, you know, the gun, and I'm thinking it went off, but like I said, obviously I pulled the trigger, but it just didn't seem that way. It just seemed like, it was just like a nice really. Obviously I did pull the trigger. And, bringing that gun to scare her, that wasn't shared. And I take full responsibility for that. I don't want to come off like, it wasn't my fault, because I'm the one that produced the gun. So obviously it was my fault. The woman was stupid. But yeah, it was my fault. But to be honest with you, sir, if I did pull the trigger, I don't even remember just like purposely pulling it. And I remember having my hand on the trigger, but it just, I didn't feel that, you know, like a point at her and trying to scare her that I really, you know. I don't even remember talking to a Russian. When the gun went off the first time and it hit the moon, to me, it didn't even seem like I pulled the trigger then. And that's, you know, but I shouldn't have been that stupid and just kept my hand on the trigger. And I never chose to point at her when the gun went off the first time. But it startled us, and I felt like, hey, you know, at least she's listening to me now, and I pulled the gun at her. I never showed that in. But through your correction, you are right. Yeah, I did pull the trigger. Even though I don't think I remember doing that, it's just with my hand being on the trigger, I shouldn't even have my hand on the trigger. And that's, I think you're right.
Mr. Freeman, like I said, the question wasn't to humiliate you, but to really get to understanding the event so that the board has a whole picture.
Yes.
I want to ask you some other questions. You have a restitution over $7,000, and sometimes it's court-ordered not to be paid until you're done with your prison sentence. But have you been able to pay any of that restitution since you've been inside the Department of Corrections?
If I remember correctly, sir, well, sir, it's your question, no, but I wasn't ordered to pay anything to do my paper.
Okay. All right. I'm not going to press that. Just so long that you know that there was a restitution amount. What's that?
Okay. I don't remember the amount. I didn't remember the restitution.
Okay. I think this is an important question because you've been inside the Department of Corrections for 25 some odd years. It looks like you haven't had too much program. Is there a reason for that?
No, there's not really a reason for it. I've taken some classes, even though some of the things that there's not a whole lot of good programming to do. But one of the things I have done, though, is despite, being in prison, I have conditioned myself over the past 17 or 18 years to really be a positive person. I have to meditate and think every day, to make sure that I make, to remind myself, I should say, sir, to make wise and good decisions. And I have done that. I feel like a person knows when they're doing something wrong. You know that there's something you shouldn't do. If you do it the way, there's going to be consequences to that. And I have worked very hard on that, to do the right thing, not to do things to try to be able to be popular in prison, to be with the in crowd. I just went to being one of the people they call it, the naive people, and just, trying to do the right thing and prepare myself for release, hopefully one of these days. And it's not an easy thing to do, because the easy thing to do is to, just to say, forget it, I'm going to be with the proper people. But there's a few others in there who choose not to do that.
Mr. Freeman, if I may interrupt it, I want to commend you for that, because probably one of the big issues for me as an individual voting board member is anger management. It seemed like on the day of the event that emotions were way off the scale, independent of the actual shooting incident. And it sounds like you put a lot of effort into calming your spirit down, so to speak. And have you taken any courses related to anger management or violent crime or domestic violence, that sort of thing?
Yes, sir. I have in 2009, I had an opportunity to take to some impact on crime victims and family. And I really wanted to take that class, and I took it. And I'm glad I did, because it dealt with so many different issues concerning domestic violence, and on the other side of that, how the crime on the families that how hard it was. And in that class, we discussed, anger problems, and what you should do before things get out of hand. And I took that class, and I'm glad it did. I'm glad I did. I don't know if it was the same thing like anger management, but it was really helpful to myself.
Okay, sir.
Yes.
I know I'm kind of moving this along right now. I'm certainly going to give you enough time to speak, but I do kind of need to move it along too, so I want to ask some more questions.
Yeah.
Do you have a release plan that includes living with your daughter?
Yes, sir.
Pursuing health benefits, working for a landscaping company, so this is the daughter from that incident, is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And again, I want to commend you for having a little history of discipline. It looks like that you have not had many problems inside the Department of Corrections for the last 14 years or so. Is that about right?
Yes, sir.
Okay, I'm going to ask my fellow board members if they have any questions for you. Yes, the Honorable Ms. Gilbert House.
Thank you, Mr. Quinones. Sir, your victim was shot not once in the head, but twice in the head. And I'm just thinking, a head is a small target. I mean, no matter how close you're standing, but a head is a small target. I'm just curious how that could happen, that she would be shot twice in the head.
May I
speak down
there? Yes, please. Okay. Well, we were in the car, in the front seat of the car. I was never standing. All this up to in the front seat of the car, from my first year into the car. And like I said, when I shot the gun the first time, I have to refrain as far as me saying that it went off, because obviously, I had to pull the trigger. But when I shot the gun the first time, it scared us. And I just remember, I grabbed her by the shirt, and then I pointed the gun at her, and I pointed the gun at her face, which was, reckless and dumb and stupid. That's what I did. I pointed at her face. Like I said, when I shot the gun again, she jumped over towards the steering wheel. I didn't see no blood at all. So I'm thinking she's got to be treated, to try to get me a leak or something. When she jumped over, and I was yelling in person, and I'm still pointing the gun at her, especially I look back over now, still reckless and irresponsible and dumb. I was pulling the gun at her and screaming at her. And she was laying sideways. And I guess when I pulled the trigger again, even though it didn't seem like I did, because I never should have my hand on the trigger, it was probably maybe less than 6 inches or so, I would say less than a foot then from her head, and I'm still swinging. And when that shot happened, that's when I seen the blood. It was kind of too much time explaining the gun situation. It was a cheap gun. I think it was a 25 caliber. And, one thing I do remember though is after I seen my blood, I just started ejecting I started pulling the slide back to eject off the gold side of the gun. I realized at the time I had smoked a big time, but I didn't want the gun to go off no more. I didn't want to shoot the gun no more. And that's how the two gunshots happened.
Okay, sir. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Pinellas.
Thank you, Ms. Woodhouse. Yes, Mr. Johnson.
So I see, how many girls, you referred to your daughters, how many daughters did you have?
Three, sir.
Okay. And so, since you've been incarcerated, you have very little tickets that you receive. And none for majors. They were for three, I think, for minors. How did you wind up staying out of trouble during your time you were incarcerated, sir?
It was a combination of things. My father would always tell me, hey, you have daughters out here that are dependent on you. You'll stay out of trouble. And that went such a long way, because even though there are things in here where it's very hard, it's so easy to get in trouble. It's hard to turn the other cheek and stay out of trouble. Even you have to avoid confrontation sometimes. I just changed my way of being, I just decided that, hey, listen, one of these days, if you're going to get out of here, you have to turn your life around. And that's what I did. It's kind of hard to explain, sir, as far as how I did it. And just one day, probably 17, 18 years ago, I just told myself, every day you remind yourself you have to do the right thing. Just try to be a better person. It doesn't mean that it will happen because the way the situation is here. But, you know, thank God it's worked out pretty good. But I wake up every day and I tell myself, listen, you're going to make wise decisions. Just no matter what the cost, just make wise decisions. And it's become real easy now. It's saying the hard thing to do. I do that, but I didn't. And I will continue to do that, sir.
Okay. One more question, sir. I see in the documentation that we have that you have two letters of support from two daughters, but maybe I may have missed one, but I didn't see one from a third daughter. Three of your daughters?
Yes, sir. Yes. I'm sorry. Say it again, sir.
I see two letters in here from two of your daughters, but I didn't, maybe I may have missed it, but I didn't recall seeing another one from your third daughter.
Well, sir, it's been brought to my attention that one of my daughters is in jail.
Okay.
In
okay, well, that explains that. I was just trying to see. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Any further questions for all board members? Okay, Mr. Freeman, before I continue, I do want to thank you for being so cooperative with the board.
Thank you, sir.
And I think you're being pretty candid about the event. I'm going to take this time to see if any of your supporters want to address the board at this point, one at a time.
Yes, please.
And when you get to the podium, if you can state your name. Pardon me. Thank you, miss.
Thank you. My name is Marcia Bell Freeman. I'm Nevada Freeman's daughter.
And what would you like to share with the board today?
I'd like to share that my dad and I have talked about what happened a lot. He's always been honest about it. He knows what he did was wrong. He feels very badly about it. He has told me about his relationship with my mom and how they both were. And he doesn't just say bad stuff. He tells them about all the good times that they had too. It's very hard not having my mother or father growing up. But at the same time, even with him being in prison, my dad's always been there for me. He's always been my most supportive person, the person I can talk to anything about. If he were able to be released, he would come live with me. And I live a pretty quiet life. I don't get into any trouble. I can't get into any trouble. I work as a public safety support specialist for the Pima County Sheriff's Department. I've been with the Sheriff's Department for the last almost 7 years. And I know that my dad would do everything to keep his life in a good situation, as well as he wouldn't want to do anything to make my life difficult. He's always thinks about me, about my sisters. He has grown a lot as he's, sometimes I don't understand how calm and reasonable he is sometimes. I think, man, I should be more like that. He always has like such good advice to give, and I know it'll be difficult at first suggesting outside, but I think that he has the right attitude, the right mind frame to get acclimated to it pretty quickly. I would be there to help him. His best friends who are also here would be there to help him. And it would just really, really be great to have him out. And, you know, ever since I was a little girl, it was counting down the years. And now it's at 25, and I'm really hoping this is the last year that I'll have to count for that. because I love my dad and I really want him to be home. And I thank you for hearing me and for hearing us. And I think that's it for right now.
Okay, thank you. And I recognize how emotional this is. That's one thing about sitting on the board, and it's not about us, but we really have to detach ourselves because it's obviously a very emotional thing. I do want to thank you for your service. You work for a fine sheriff's department. And have you considered the victim issue as far as where he might live? Because there might be a restriction to him living with you, seen as a victim in this crime. I don't know that for a fact. But have you researched that?
I haven't researched that. But he does have some other options as far as living goes. It's just that I would be the best option, seeing as I, you know, single, I don't have any kids, I don't really have any other situations that might be complicated. But he does have, you know, friends. My aunt as well. She lives out a little bit further, but I will look into that. I hope that's not the case, but if it is, then we'll adapt to it.
Well, certainly this board does not decide where someone is housed, if they're released back to the community, but it is something to think about. And I just want to make sure that I put that idea out there. The other thing, it's kind of a curiosity, and I'll be very careful because there's the business of asking you to speak for the people, but it would seem that your sister also wrote a letter for him,
yes.
Right? Did he have a rapport with the third sister? And then, I'm sorry to hear that she had trouble, but did he have a rapport with her too?
He did, yeah. He always asked about her. She's kind of a little bit more quiet, and we had a little bit of a separation in growing up. I hadn't actually seen her since I was like 10 years old, up until a few years ago. But he does write to her. She's actually my half-sister, but he's always treated her just like a daughter, just like my other sister and I. He's never treated her any differently. And
well, again, I don't mean to put you in a corner on that one. It's just more of a general insight into relationships.
Yes.
I'll ask my fellow board, any questions? Well, thank you for appearing before the board today, ma'am.
Thank you.
And would you like to speak next?
I would.
Thank you, sir.
Good afternoon. My name is Rocky Robles. I've been in Nevada since tenth grade around there. I met him through my best friend. At that time, I was an abusive father, so I really looked up to him. He helped me stay in school. Even though he was in there, I called him. I had my own problems. Marriage, work, couldn't get a job for more than 5 years. He'd always be a voice of reason, talk to me about, you know, look at your future, look at your kids, look at your family. So I did. And now I'm a superintendent of the city of Tucson. I handle all the warehousing, TFD, TPD, everything. I'm very successful. I'm known successful. Business also, landscape company for 12 years, which I am planning on having Mr. Freeman come on board full time and eventually manage it, because I'm getting tired of doing that. I just think about it. I don't trust nobody to look at my business, and I am so looking forward to him helping me. It's nowadays with the economy, it's a struggle. So I operate out of all as far as Pinal County to all the way to Rio Rico. So, you know, I could use his help, but most of all, I wanted to mention that me and him keep in touch. I go visit him once a month. I've seen the changes, I've heard the changes, and I never regret. You know, we love Juanita. They were always at our home. The girls, we know them since they were born. We were there. He knows my kids except my last daughter. And yeah, they were a happy couple, but you know, tragedy struck, and I hear it in the voice. Something he could never take back, but he regrets fully, because he loves his daughters, and that's the one thing he has to make up in his lifetime, is those lost years. and I will do anything in my power to help anyone. So he has a support system with me and my family. I know he does good in there because my son works at that prison. He's a prison guard. And he says, he is his own man. He doesn't see that often. My son says, people respect him because of that. He doesn't get into any of the stuff that's out there. He's never done drugs. He's never failed any tests. He loves to read. He educates himself. He takes care of his own mind, you know, and like he said, it's true. He believes in God. He looks for the higher power. So do I. But I think that's commendable. I mean, that he does his own time with his own man, and he doesn't let any of the politics inside the prison get to him. And that meant a lot hearing it from my son, you know, because it's tough in there. So I ask that the board consider absolute discharge because I know he could get back to society and hit the ground running. With my business, I'm almost unselfish, but he'll be crossing county lines to work, you know. As far as a place to live, I have property, I have a house, I have an RV. Like I said, he will be fine, you know. And I know, and his fire people never hurt anybody, or even us, because it just hurts all of us. And he won't ever hurt us or anybody again. I know it in my heart, he won't. So I ask if you could consider asking this, sir. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Hold on a second, I'm going to ask any board members have any questions. It was very compelling testimony. Thank you for coming before the board today.
Feel from the heart. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Of the board, thank you for hearing our testimony and allowing us time. My name is Demetrio Fernandez. I am 48 years old. I am a husband and father of three very young children, 8, 6, and 2-year-old. I work for the city of Tucson. Actually, I work with Mr. Robles as a supervisor for that warehousing operation. I've been there for 10 years, a little bit over 10 years. I've known Nevada since he was 18 years old. He was my backdoor neighbor, and I was a very unruly child. And growing throughout my childhood, Nevada and his family has been a part of my family. And as people grow, a lot of those members have moved on and distanced themselves, but me and Nevada both have remained in very close contact, so much that I consider him my family, like an older brother to me. And he has a very positive influence in my life. More so now, in his change as far as settling down and being a moral compass and a stronger character of an individual who didn't have control over his emotion. I believe that I can tell you with 100% honesty that he has control over his emotions. And I believe his stay in his incarcerated state shows that he has control over his emotions. I don't know what it's like in there. I have a brother who's been in the system in and out, and I know he can't keep out of trouble. I don't know what it's like, but I could imagine it's very, very hard to stay out of trouble. And I commend him, being Nevada, every day when I talk to him. Excuse me, I don't talk to him every day, but every day that I do talk to him, which is usually about once a week, and then regular visits. I commend him on him making sure that he takes care of himself so that one day he may be able to live a life where he can be with his friends, his family, his grandson that he's met a couple of times, I believe, in visitation. But outside in the real world, so they can get to know him and he can live some sort of life with his children. I understand that that's going to be a process in itself. There's a lot of unresolved issues, I would imagine, as there is with me. As close as we were, it affected me greatly. In understanding what he did. That act not only took Juanita's life, but affected a lot more people than I think he understood at the time. He understands that now, and I believe he's and believe he takes that into consideration every single day when he wakes up. And the decisions he decides to make those days, he doesn't make those emotional decisions any longer, is my experience with him. So please take into consideration all of his past, the good and the bad, up until now. I look forward to seeing his release in the event that that is the case. I hope it is. He has all support from me and my family, my wife of 10 years, as well as my children. They are aware of who he is. Pictures, unfortunately, they don't go see him. He talks to them. My boy talks to them on the phone, as well as my wife. So I will be part of that support system in the event that, that he's granted parole or absolute discharge, which I am a strong opponent of. Sorry, proponent of.
And I need a new charges.
It will allow him to move forward in ways I think he is not able to at this point with his situation being incarcerated. I understand that's his doing. He's there because of himself. He understands that. And I believe moving forward, he will make the right decisions, and I'll be there to support him in making those decisions as well, as well as his daughters and Roki, Mr. Robles. So thank you for your time. If you have any questions.
Just to follow up before you return to your seat, frankly, I want to thank all three of you. This is no indication of how this board is going to vote. We have to make some tough decisions on behalf of the people of Arizona. But the testimony of all three of you is powerful, I want to put it. It's not what we see every day. So we do appreciate you representing today before the board.
And I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Before we continue, I see that one of the victims' coordinators is in the room. Do we have any statements or anything about the victims? There is an appropriate time to mention, though, to remind the hearing room that there is a victim in this case, and it's something that we can't forget. And that one of the individuals testifying today on behalf of Mr. Freeman, and I think it's powerful, could just as easily be sitting on the other side of the room right now. Opposing this, and it would be understandable. So we're getting to the point, Mr. Freeman, we're getting to the near the end of your hearing. Is there a final statement you would like to make to the board before we go into discussion? We really ask that you don't repeat anything that you've already told us, but this is your hearing. So is there anything else that you feel is important for us to know or understand before the board votes or goes into discussion and votes on this case?
Yes, sir. I would like to say that I guess I'm a little bit unique from other inmates in prison, where I've had a lot of interactions, you know, with
Wednesday that I just feel like I would be able to interact with anybody, have conversations with different people, make new friends. That's something I really look forward to. And I want the board to please realize I'm not being arrogant, but that part of it, I feel the free world doesn't scare me. What really scares me is just staying in here, being with my family. That's what scares me. But being able to interact with the outside world, I so much look forward to that. I'm not even in the least bit worried or scared. Right now I am a little worried, and I apologize for my family. I'm a little nervous. But before I show, not to repeat anything, but it's really important for me to realize, regardless of how things turn out, what I did was wrong, and I sincerely apologize, but because of my actions, pointing it out, and that's totally on me, that's my fault. I guess it's a good thing that I have to think about this every day, and even when I get out, I will think about it. That way I would never have to rush judgment or be violent towards anybody again. And I will thank my family and friends for showing today. I want to thank the board. I really appreciate you, ladies and gentlemen, for giving me the opportunity to speak. I was kind of nervous speaking, but just thank you all so much for allowing me that. And that's all I have to say. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Freeman. The board will be going into discussion now. It may sound like that we're speaking with you directly, but it is the board discussing the case amongst itself under the open meeting laws of Arizona. So if you'll stay on the phone and remain silent, we will come back to you shortly with our decision. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir.
The board is now in discussion. Fellow board members, I think this is a difficult case, in as much that Mr. Freeman, I believe, is really on a rehabilitation journey. And I'm seeing a lot of positive signs of that rehabilitation, and particularly his dedication to being peaceful, if you will. And he's done a very good job of navigating prison system, considering the problems that people can get into in that environment. And it sounds like, not to put words in his mouth, but it is meditative, that he's at least taken the one of the programs that's related to crime and violence, and I think it was helpful towards him. If I have any concern today, it's that his programming is a bit low. But to move the discussion along, I'm certainly seeing him as someone on a trajectory for, regardless of how we vote today, to developing himself inside the prison system and possibly being a candidate for supervised release, but that's where we begin the discussion. Yes, Mr. Johnson.
I agree. He does not as much programming as we usually see. However, it's unusual that you find someone who's been in prison that long who hasn't received not one major ticket since he's been in there, and he's had three very minor tickets since he's been there. It does have a good release plan. I think his family's going to look out, for him. I think it's encouraging that throughout this incident, what has happened, that he's maintained and continues to maintain a relationship with his daughters, which is something that I consider extremely important. And that is, one daughter Texas is, you know, Juan DeVille, but that they would be there to support him. I know that the one gentleman did ask for an absolute discharge, but I would not be supportive of an absolute discharge. I think that home arrest is so important. Things have changed so dramatically since 25 years ago with cars. You know, you now have cars that have a display in it. You don't need a key to start putting in ignition. I mean, things are so different. Technology has changed so much, and home arrest just gives them that opportunity to really get more adjusted to what's going on, as opposed to just go out there. I just kind of seen over the years, it seems like when they just go straight out to a parole, that they wind up as too much for them. And there's a lot of them. He says that he could, he's prepared himself for it, that he could communicate with anyone, and I believe he could communicate with anyone, but there's a lot to learn over the with technology and vehicles, and you know, having that opportunity that, you know, people say it's just a difference in life from having everyday life to, you know, I've heard people say just going to the store and walk through the store and be able to make decisions, the very basic things that we take every day for granted, that I would be supportive of a home arrest as opposed to absolute discharge. So.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Ms. Whitwell?
No reports.
Okay. Dr. Ryan?
I still have some reservation. Yes, he's made a great deal of progress, and I have to give him credit for that. And his support of family and friends, I guess in addition to the lack of programming, and I guess that can be seen, can be reconciled. I'm still concerned, as you all know, and I know that he's made a great deal of progress, and this is probably contradicting what I'm going to say, but he just is not, this is just his first time coming for this board, and I just have some reservations that first time, and no matter how much progress they've made. So I just leave it at that, sir.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Newell.
I don't really have anything to add to that.
Well, thank you, sir. And thank all my colleagues. Before I make a motion, I do want to state again that I am very impressed with the support, and it's not about them, it's certainly about Mr. Freeman, but I think it's an indication of the sort of people he surrounds himself with, and I think Mr. Freeman shows tremendous promise. I am not comfortable at this point recommending whether for absolute discharge or home arrest, and for a summary of reasons that we've heard, I think it's early in his eligibility. I think his programming is a bit low, and I'd like to see a little bit more of that in preparation for his possible reentry into the community. But I will say one more time, I think he's shown tremendous progress, and I want him to hear that support motivational statement. Therefore, I'm going to make a motion. My motion is regarding Mr. Nevada Ray Freeman, ADC number 109821. That is to deny regular parole, home arrest or absolute discharge, and I will ask after that about set offs, but for now I'm asking to deny.
Second.
Agree.
I disagree.
Seconded by Mr. Neal, agreed by Dr. Wright, agreed by Ms. Rittenhouse, disagreed by Mr. Johnson. And I will ask my colleagues whether or not you think a 6-month or a 1-year set off is appropriate.
I'm doing a 6 months.
Well, I'll ask for a six month set off, so I'm not going to check any boxes, so that he'll be declared eligible within 6 months. Release type denied. 412A, 411, and HA. Again, that's regular parole, absolute discharge of home arrest. Reasons for denial are as follows. serious and violent offense, loss of human life, trauma to the victim, serious bodily injury. Also multiple victims in the context of the kids being near to the incident, and of course the loss of their mother. He has little in the way of criminal history. I can check prior criminal history for the rest. I feel like it's strong language, but it is very little programming, so I'm going to check lack of programming as an encouragement. And I think that would be it. Does anyone care about anything else? Okay, Mr. Freeman, the board has voted. I hope you heard the encouragement. It was 4-1 to deny one deferral, absolute discharge, or home arrest, but please do not take this as a negative. It's a statement of encouragement. You're early in your eligibility cycle. We did not ask for a full one-year set-off. We're encouraging programming. That's no indication of how we'll vote the next time. But I will say individually, as an independent voting board member, I do believe that you're on the trajectory of rehabilitation in a profound way. And again, I do appreciate the support of your friends and family. This will bring our hearing to a close. We want to thank you for appearing before the board today, Mr. Freeman, and for being so pleasant and straightforward. Thank you, sir.
I want to thank you and the board, too. I appreciate each and every one of you, and he's here now. And I just want to say thank you, and I look forward to seeing you whenever we can. It's possible for me to see you again. So thank you very much.
Well, again, sir, you'll be scheduled, or the Department of Corrections will certify you for eligibility within 6 months. So we look forward to seeing you again soon. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Stay safe.